All right. Let's see. It's 3:02, and I'd like to call the ESAC Waste Diversion Collections and Education Subcommittee to order for our Wednesday, March 6th, 2024 meeting. Okay. Roll call. Let's see. We got Doug
Here.
and Fred,
Here.
Trevor.
Here.
And Margot is
Here.
joining us. Okay.
Yes.
Well, item number two, I just sent a copy of the annual report to Brittany. Doug, I know you wanted to help with it, but
That's
Brittany
okay.
came to my rescue.
Was that?
Brittany came to my
Oh,
rescue
good job.
and got the staff rounded up, and that makes sense. They gave me information on what they thought was important and not just what I thought was important. So I liked being able to combine that information. And then of course Margot always saves me. So okay. So you should have gotten that, right, Brittany?
Yes, I sent it out about an hour ago. I know it probably doesn't give much time to read through it, but you all have it. You can go ahead and use maybe track changes or within the Word document or
He's red.
right, use red, highlight however you want to. And we can go over that in a little more detail at the next meeting.
Okay,
How do we
yeah.
make change? How do we, I'm sorry, how do we make changes on that?
Let me share my screen and I'll point that out for you.
Yeah, I made it a Word document, so you should all be able to.
Oh, okay.
This is Word, and then up here in your ribbon, you have a review tab, and then if you click on that track changes, this way when you type, it automatically is in red. And this way, if you do make changes within the Word document and email it back, I can see what changes were made. Or if you're old-fashioned, you can just highlight your change like that. But the track changes work so much better.
Yeah, it helps. So is everybody okay with that?
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
so. If I have a
So,
problem, I'll get a hold of Brittany again.
all right. Every time I do these yearly reports, it seems like ESAC does more and more and more from when I first started. And I guess you, City of Tucson folks can attest to that. So, been busy years here. Okay. There's no other comments. I'll move on to item three for the code enforcement update. Hi, Lori.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah. We'll make sure you get a copy too, right?
I think I was copied on that.
Okay, good.
Thank you. So we have three items today for code enforcement. Evaluating safety procedures. So we're going over a couple of items that have been requested from inspectors. One being body armor and others being respirators. So we're involving risk management, and then, also implementing safety procedures that could be added to the code enforcement procedures manual, as well as annual safety training. So that is a good step forward on that.
Question.
Uh, secondly, oh, yes.
Why do they want body armor?
it's a request, and it's due, I think, just to the climate of some of the halls we go out to, like homeless camps, or we sometimes go to vacant houses, and so we just, the request was made, so we're evaluating, you know, maybe it's something that could be addressed through procedures rather than necessarily equipment where a code enforcement inspector might come across as different, you know, like, for example, if you're going up to a home to talk about weeds, and then you're wearing a big safety vest, as you know, it's a different impression that you would get otherwise. So stuff we're looking at.
Isn't body armor the name brand on some PPE equipment also?
I'm unsure about that. I know there's, well, I don't know if that's a brand name, but it would call it like, and this is the first time I'm looking into it too. So body armor, but it could be.
Yeah, I think they make gloves and protective sleeves and such.
Yeah.
It might be Under Armour.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, Under Armour. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense now. Okay.
Yeah, and we had a case, Lori knows this, you know, for a hoarding case that I was trying to get taken care of for over 5 years. When code inspectors came onto the property, this guy was aggressive. He threw things at them. A police officer from then on always had to go with the code inspector to this property.
So, right, and that's definitely a recommendation.
I mean, it would seem to me that that would make more sense, that when there's the code inspector is feeling threatened, that they retreat and get a police officer to go with them, because, you know, there's more to safety than just wearing body armor. I mean, there's
right.
how you approach it, there's how you de-escalate, there's how you get out of the way, there's, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it seems to me you're starting to make them into policemen. And I don't know, I just see that having an agreement with the police, such as the case that Chris just mentioned, certainly makes sense, but for everyone to get that just seems to me way out.
What instead of, excuse me, Margo, but what instead of police officers, what about community service officers?
Well, they're, they're not trained. I don't know what their training situations. Is.
So. No, they're not. They're not supposed to do that stuff.
Okay.
And the respirator is for leaking gas or for what?
Well, we do respond to fire. So after a fire's been put out, a structure fire, we'll get called to condemn the structure. And historically, we've gone in after the fire's out, but there's still fumes, gases. And whereas we had N95s, there's been a concern that we don't have the right equipment. And so risk management was evaluating that and determine like the amount of time that we actually would be in there doesn't approve us for like a self-contained kind of respirator. And so we're kind of doing a best practices thing right now. And we have been where we determine that maybe we don't need to immediately go into the fire. You know, we can make a determination from beyond the bounds of the property. You know, obviously we know the utilities have been off, and then clearly a fire damaged structure, which is enough to allow us to quote unquote condemn the property, issue the paperwork, and then secure it if necessary. You know, in addition to a lot of stuff we do, that's an interesting one.
But what about the threat of cancer too, with all these materials that once they catch on fire, once they burn, it releases toxins from for, you know, and firefighters at more risk now than they've ever been because of the way furniture is made and the materials that they use for that. So I would see the need for having a respirator in those kinds of situations.
Yeah. Well, and I think risk management, you know, is looking at it as, you know, well, at least for code enforcement, you know, just remove us from the situation entirely. Like, you know, saying we can do our jobs from outside. We don't have to go into the structure necessarily. So, you know, in that way, using that as the safety measure, you know, outside of getting, you know, like what the firefighters are using, they have a whole suit and, you know, self-contained breathing, you know, so it's just, it seems like from their thought, it makes more sense that way.
Yeah, and inspectors go into vacant and neglected properties. So I would think there would be hazards in that respect too. So you don't know what's inside this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a lot of contamination. So
yeah, there's but and we'll have personal protective equipment available. You know, we've got goggles and N95s, gloves, booties. Good. We even have some Tyvek suits.
But it seems to me that, you know, when you start using fancy equipment like respirators and body armor, you need a lot of training to go along with that. I mean, just putting the stuff on, just strapping it over your face is not good enough.
Right. You have to be certified in it, and it has to be fitted. And so they're looking at a lot of things, and it may not be that's what happens, but but the request had been made. and going on, and that kind of leads into on-call inspectors. So we have, we did have four. Right now, we have three and training someone else. We do have on-call inspectors, and then primarily they do respond to fires to condemn them. Occasionally, we get the police will call us out for either a hoarder or what we call a call or a car into building. So it may surprise you to know that people drive their cars into buildings quite frequently. Sometimes, you know, it's the quick mart, you know, but sometimes it's a drunk driver and they end up, they veer off and they hit somebody's house. So it does happen quite a bit. And so we have to make sure that the structure is safe. How much damage there is, do we need to condemn it, secure it, that kind of thing. And so I wanted that as a one of the points today, because I wasn't sure if everybody knew we did that sort of thing. And we are losing people, so it makes it a little harder. And we usually have two inspectors on. For one doing like the north side of the town, the other obviously the south. But we're, you know, reviewing different, you know, ways to set it up if we don't have four people anymore, if we have to go to three, because it is voluntary. Any questions on that?
How many again do you have?
We did have four. Poor volunteers. So we do like a 30 day on, 30 day off.
And you have just two now?
Yes, with one trainee. So I'm hoping to get back to the two on, two off. At one time when we were more fully staffed, I think we had more, maybe even as many as eight people doing this. But we got a good crew and the work gets done. and then the third point today I wanted to bring up was homeless protocol. And I just wanted to kind of reiterate what we code enforcement specifically does with the homeless protocol. So primarily we work with when the camp is on a private property. And so the homeless protocol group in Tucson Police will contact a private property owner, but in instances where they cannot get a hold of them, because they want to do is have them sign a letter of consent so they can enter the property and remove the unwanted individuals, especially in a tier three. But when they can't do that, then they'll transfer it to code enforcement. And so we do further research. We attempt to find the owner, contact the owner, get them to sign that. And then we can bring Tucson Police back in. And then we can facilitate environmental services cleaning it up if the owner also signs a waiver. if they don't do this, we may even write a notice of violation. So one way or another, we help get it done on private property.
And it does take a lot of time. I know, Laura, you guys work hard on that. And it's, and with all the absentee landlords we have in this city now, it's hard to get a hold of people, isn't it?
It is. And then we get some unusual situations. Like we have one right now where the owner wants the people on there. And so they don't want to sign the letter of consent for the Tucson police. And then that's basically, we're going to have to proceed with writing a ticket, you know, so it's going to extend the case out, but you know, you can't, camping or illegal occupation of a vacant property isn't allowed. And, you know, we can have compassion for people who are homeless too, but you know, when it gets up to a tier three, then I think it becomes more of a serious situation.
Definitely. Any questions for Lori? Nope. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
Okay. Hang in there. Hope you get some more people soon. All right. Let's move on to item four for waste diversion. And we've got the MRF report to go over. Christina, is that you? There she is. There it is.
So here's the report. We did have more tonnage last month. The prices seem to be, you know, doing pretty well. I was kind of surprised to see the colored plastics, the colored HDPE was pretty high. Contamination is staying low, so that's a good thing, you know, but we're still at over 20%, so it's still not what I would like, but at least in terms of our costs, we're doing okay. Interestingly, we had a conversation this week with Councilman Kozacik, because we wanted to update him on the Hefty Renew program, and he was not aware that we're, you know, getting revenues from the recyclables. He thought, you know, because he's been telling people all plastics, and we're seeing a lot of good plastics in the recycling bales that have been collected from the orange bin. Lots of jugs, lots of water bottles. Mm-hmm. You know, we shared with him that, you know, we're getting a nice revenue share now, and that really does help us to offset our bill every month. So hopefully he did say something in his newsletter this week about, you know, still your choice, but putting them in the blue barrel will help offset our costs. So I guess that's a good change.
Yeah, no, he really does need to say that, because I've had to talk to a lot of people that have said, well, they're just putting all their plastic. Taking it to Steve. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, and I'll talk to them about MRF reports and everything and what we see and what we need. So,
right. Yeah. And we're definitely going to be putting out a lot of information around recycling. We're updating all our information because we still get a lot of questions. And we, you know, as we move ahead with the hard to recycle plastics, we want to make sure that they're going to be the ones that, you know, can be made into something new and not just everything, because, you know, again, all the recycling commodities, and diagnosis more than anybody, you know, if they're sorted properly and they're the right stuff, they can generate a higher price. So,
Christina, what do you think about plastic shopping bags? Because I know, you know, I've always taken them back to Target or someplace else, the grocery stores.
My understanding is, you know, that what we hear from the stores is they are definitely recycling.
Okay. Because I think a lot of bags are going also into...
And that's fine, because that's what they want.
Okay.
They're looking for the single-use plastics, the straws, the film, the plastic cutlery. Again, the nice thing with the Hefty Renew program, they're going to take the styrofoam, which Bifusion does not want. But Bifusion works with Hefty. They will still be receiving whatever they need from our collections. But hopefully, until they're up and running, we'll have other outlets for that material. So, and, you know, at some of our trainings for the compost, people said, well, they're always overfilled, you know, the orange bins. And you know, I just tell them, well, yeah, because you're putting the wrong stuff in them. You know, you're putting the bulky plastics. That's not what we want. That's not what they were intended for. So,
question, which is, I've been looking at the HDPE natural bottles number 2, and that one went down from December to January, and it's quite far down from what it was like last fall. And now the pigmented bottles is higher than the non-pigmented, which is very strange. Well, it's different. I shouldn't say strange. It's just not the pattern that we've seen before. Have you heard any reasons why there's been this switch in what the values?
I think it just, you know, it goes in cycles. Like, we'll see. I mean, I thought it was weird when the natural HDPE was higher than the aluminum.
Yeah, that was really strange. Indeed it was.
So I, you know, it's all market driven, and I think that it's just kind of depends on what the needs are at the moment.
You know, I read something that that there might be a shortage.
There definitely is a shortage.
There's a shortage.
There's discussion about. What are they calling it? It's basically a bottle bill, but they're calling it a recycling refund legislation. And it's being supported by beverage manufacturers and other big corporations, because they're all seeing shortages on the recycled material that they need to package their products in. And so the people like Coke are not getting the plastic, the aluminum that they need. It's just across the board.
Okay. Are there any more questions for Christina? All right.
I do want to thank Christina for kind of talking about the non-recyclable plastic collections. I was going to talk a little bit about that, but she touched on it when it comes down to the collections on number 6. Thank you, Christina.
You're welcome. We actually, the people from Hefty were here last week, and we took them out to see what we have stored. And, you know, unfortunately, the message got out there that we could take all plastics, and there were quite a few things. Like, somebody dropped off 4,600 pounds of sheets of plastic, PVC, that nobody can use. And so it's really important to let people know that this is really for post-consumer material, not for commercial and industrial waste.
Okay.
And there were car parts and, you know, just everything. And that's, you know, that I don't believe that that was the intention, but that's the message that has been out there. So we will have to do some backtracking on it. The nice thing about the hefty bags is they do specifically say on the bag what to put in them. So hopefully we'll see that get better.
Good.
So where did those plastic sheets come from? I gather they're heavy, not like plastic bags, but it's
they look like a piece of ledger paper. They're about 17 by 11, but they're PVC. So
are they being used in the 3D printers?
I don't think it would be a 3D printer. I think it would be some kind of printing operation, but not they're very thin, but they're PVC. And you know, what we were told is if somebody wanted to recycle that material and just had it all by itself, they could probably find somebody that wanted it, but mixed in with everything else, it just wasn't acceptable.
You think it came from like an industrial?
Yes.
Commercial customer?
Yeah, there was business? There was somebody that had asked Steve specifically if we could take that, and he said that he told them yes, but like in bits, but they dropped off the whole thing.
Oh, I see.
And I think he commented in his newsletter that the tonnage went up from 1,200 to really high. It was because 4,600 pounds of that material was dropped off at once.
Do people put in plastic chairs?
They can actually put those in their blue bin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Rigid plastics are fine.
Okay.
Are you referring to like Adirondacks?
Maybe not an Adirondack, because that's usually a composite material.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
But we're talking about those, you know, petty thin chairs. Ones.
Cheapos, yeah. Packing ones. Yeah.
What's a point when you're sitting them wrong?
The Adirondack, you know.
Just the patio chairs, the little patio chairs. Very lightweight.
And again, you know, that's the kind of thing. I mean, people aren't getting rid of those all the time, right? Residents, you know, it's once in a while, just like your reusable plasticware, like, you know, your Ziploc containers and stuff. You know, the idea is to reuse them, but then at some point you may need to dispose of them, but it's not the stuff we're getting rid of every day.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You're next again. Recycling drop off.
So we did set up the Ward 2 has an NRC again. It's been pretty good. It's right by my house, so I go by there all the time just to check on things, and it seems to be doing okay. The illegal dump people haven't discovered it yet. So we're hoping it's not very visible from the street, so that could be more helpful. I did want to update you on the food cycle at home. And Brittany, can you pull up the report?
Yes, give me a sec. And it was emailed out too.
Yes. Right. But it's going very well. I mean, I think we have about close to 500 people signed up. We're doing another info session on Saturday at El Pueblo Center because we are putting a new drop-off site at the Tucson Clean and Beautiful offices on Campbell and Irvington. It will be a locked site, so it'll be available 24/7. But what we've noticed is, aside from Highland Vista, which is a monitored site, but that's a very active neighborhood, and they've been really great about contributing to the project. The other sites that are doing well are the locked bins, Little Leaf and what's the other one? Little Leaf and Ward 4, the last one. So they seem to be doing better. So I think moving forward, our idea is going to be that we're going to try and have locked bins that people will have access to anytime, because that convenience factor seems to be affecting this. So I believe we've been tasked with trying to identify at least one other site in each ward, so that there will be two. And moving ahead with our virtual training, just so that more people can become, you know, participants. And then we are doing some drop-offs of compost at Ward 6, Highland Vista, and Ward 3, so that people who participate in the program can pick up compost for their home use.
Cool.
And we heard that the U of A is going to take a lot of the compost. So we're really happy about that. We are about 2 months away from having no more space. So we need to, you know, clear out some of that. So, and it's really a nice quality compost. You can just see it. It's pretty good. And we have the compost cats to thank for that, because, well, one of their graduates is running things at the landfill, and then of course they're still going out checking temperatures and making sure that it's all being processed so correctly. So it's been great.
Good news.
Okay, and then the next thing is the zero waste collection event. We are scheduled for April 6th, once again, at the Catalina United Methodist Church. So if you all have friends that need to get rid of stuff, we will be there. Oh, I want to tell you something that came out of this project. Last year, last November, the Friends of the Public Library asked if they could participate and collect books instead of Bookmans. And Bookmans was very happy to not do it, because they were really doing it to help us out more than anything. But we were looking at how that material could be recycled, because Bookmans, Goodwill, anybody, any thrift store that gets books, certainly the U of A probably has to deal with this too. You reach a point where the books, you can't do anything with them. You know, you can't sell them, you can't give them away. They're not, or they may be not in good shape, but nobody wants to throw away books, right? So Friends of the Library has a contact up in the Phoenix area that does actually have one of the machines that breaks the binder and separates it and can recycle the paper. They process about 11,000 tons a month.
Wow.
And we have been able to connect them with Bookmans and Goodwill Also, so now they're going to be working with this company to get to be able to recycle the stuff that they just can't pass along anymore.
I just donated a bunch of books today with the Friends of Library.
Yeah, and all of them, you know, everybody says we don't want to throw them away. We don't want to have to recycle them. If there's something that people will read or pass along, or, you know, I mean, when we went to tour the Goodwill facility, they had boxes and boxes with labels that were going, books that were going to Literacy Connects. So they're all getting them out there as much as they can. It's just you do reach a point where there's no one to take them. And I know at the U of A, I'm sure textbooks are a big thing.
So, what's the name of the company, Christina?
I will send you the name of the person. Okay. I'll send you her contact information. I don't have them. Let's see if I can pull it.
Okay. I know U of A uses a recycler also based out of Phoenix. So I'm just curious if it's the same one, or if it's a different one for that exact same purpose.
Let's see. The company is called Recycle One USA.
No, that's easy, remember?
Yeah. So, yeah, very happy that that came about. That's it.
Awesome. Okay, anything else for Christina? All right, let's move on to item six for collections. Compost deliveries. Now, who do we...
Got Jose.
Is that you, Jose? Okay.
Yeah, so Christina, once again, thank you. I'll be bouncing off of some of the what she talked about. So when it comes down to the food cycle at home, you know, she did mention that the deliveries that have been going over to the landfill and the composting, they've been collecting a lot of that compost that's there. So we've been having a lot of requests from many neighborhood associations and communities. So over the and I'll get back to you on the exact dates when we started delivering, because I couldn't gather that information. But we've had 68 deliveries to different communities, you know, such as Quincy Douglas, St. Mark's, New Spirit, some to Ward 3, Purple Heart, Highland Vista. They've requested, and we've had over 68 deliveries in that. The total tonnage is 159 tons of compost that we've delivered to the different locations.
Okay. And do you do that free of charge?
Yeah, they request it. Usually we use
that. Really nice. Yeah,
we do. And usually they we kind of have to work with the Brush and Bulky crews. Brush and Bulky crews have the dump trucks. So we, you know, when they make a request, you know, we try to get them as soon as possible. So we kind of work, you know, they come through us and we work the Brush and Bulky so we can get those deliveries out there. We'll go to the landfill, we call Jose, they'll fill up the truck and make our deliveries. And there are some times where they're too busy with the Brush and Bulky using that truck. We'll deliver it on Saturdays also. I know in the past we've delivered roll-offs, you know, loaded with some of the compost also. So yeah, and they're using it and they like it, and they've been, you know, calling us back for more of the compost.
That's awesome.
Jumping into the non-recyclable, Christina already, you know, beat me to the talking about that. So I'm glad that she had that, but I do have a couple of numbers for you guys. And since we've been delivering over at Friedman, we in 2023 we delivered 131 tons of plastic. For this year, to date, we have 64 tons that have gone in there since the beginning of the year. That grand total comes out to 194 tons. total that they have as of right now. One of the things that Freeman, you know, once they set up the bales back in August of 2023, they delivered, the first load was in August of 20 bales. That's 26,000 pounds. Then the second load went out in November 8th of 2023. We, you know, they delivered another 20 bales, which is 26,780 pounds. And all these deliveries went over, were delivered to Bifusion. And then this year on January 9th, we delivered the 20 bales, and that one was at 28,000 pounds, for a total of 40.925 tons that has been shipped to Bifusion. And then, yeah, just so that way you guys know, when we talk about bales, we the average weight of a bale is 1,362 pounds on the bales. Bag was the tonnage received by Freedman the past few months. In November, since 23, we the month of 2023, we had 23.36 tons. In December of 23, we had 24 tons. January, right now we're at 0.32 tons. And then February so far, we have 39 tons. That's when Christina was talking about those sheets that were dropped off. So that's how much weight it added more to the sheets that were delivered. You know, it's the stuff was so heavy. And just like Christina was saying, if you look at a ream of paper, you know, like for a copy machine, it's 11 by 17. That's what they look like. And they're thin sheets. They just look like paper. But it's that plastic stuff that, you know, that was being dropped off. Right now at Freedman, we have a total of 207 bales on site. And at Los Reales, we have 130 bales, approximately 229 tons being stored currently. So for the past couple of months, it's, you know, we've had a lot of success with the with some of the plastic that's being delivered over to our Freedman.
Where is that?
Freedman?
Yeah.
More or less, I don't know if you know where the SunTran station is at. That's over by Prince and the freeway area.
I guess I don't get over
there. Yeah, Prince and
the freeway. I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's Prince and the freeway. It's called Freedman Recycling.
One thing, before we built our own MRF, that's where we took things.
Oh, okay.
Actually, we used to take it to Waste Management. They had a MRF out there.
Yes.
But Freedman's took it too, I thought. No?
I not since I've worked here, but one thing, you know, with Jose, though, what he was saying with all the material we have stored, you know, Bifusion just doesn't have the capacity to process everything that's being generated. And that's why we're having to store. So we're really looking at for ways that we can get some of the stuff out of here, because it does become a potential hazard. And we really don't want that to happen.
So is the new Bifusion plant going to be handled the level that we're doing, generating, or are they always going to be behind with the increasing amount of storage?
Well, you know, it's been very popular. Steve has really gotten people excited about this. Our commitment will be to provide as much as Bifusion needs, but with Hefty, we want to be able to have outlets for any excess materials that can't be handled. And certainly in the interim, you know, we're not expecting that facility to be up and running for at least a year. And
you're looking at storing an equivalent amount, so another 350 bales or something.
Yes.
So how long will it take by Fusion to work through that?
At the rate we've been going or what they're expecting, Carlos is estimating that it would take them about 9 months just to clear what has been stored.
And in the meantime, you continue to collect, so.
Yes.
It'll take a while. Okay.
Anything else, Jose?
That's going to be it. Christina stole my thunder.
Are there any collections? Any
I am so sorry.
You're good, Christina. You're good.
Any new trucks showing up?
As a matter of fact, right now we did receive some pictures of some of the rear loaders that are that have been finished up. We did find some discrepancies, you know, when the Brush and Bulky uses those trucks. So we did contact them. We let them know. I'm just waiting for the email to get back to us. But that's the only one that I have for right now. As the other trucks, we still haven't heard anything when exactly we'll be receiving those trucks. But they should be coming in here pretty soon, crossing our fingers, because we are in need of those vehicles.
And how are the drivers holding up? Are you still having the same number or still having trying to hire?
As a matter of fact, we had a recruit, and I think when we last talked, right now they're in the process, you know, whether they're going to accept the position or not when it comes down to, you know, for what they'll be getting paid. So right now I think we have one employee that's going to get started here on March 11th that accepted the position. So we're going to have one driver that's going to be coming on board with us. We did have another recruitment also for ESWs for workers. And we had 29 that, you know, that we accepted their application. We went through the hiring process, and then we interviewed them right now. So we're just waiting for them to see how many are going to accept the position. You know, right now we do have positions that are open over at the landfill, over with the Brush and Bulk, and even with the homeless camp cleanups. So I think we talked about a little bit about it last time where, you know, we have that one of the workers, he was going to get his CDL. So right now he's doing his classes. He's doing his full time. We have a computer for him set up here in the office, and he's, you know, every day. That's all he's doing. He's preparing himself to get his CDL. Mm-hmm. We do have another three employees that are going to be enrolling in the CDL class for next month, which will get started on April 1st. So that, you know, there's a lot of the workers that they're coming in, and, you know, they get that option. Hopefully that's going to help us to get them driving and, you know, and then kind of reduce the amount of people that we need in order for them to become drivers.
Good. Yeah, I think we should have a standing list on our agenda about the status of drivers and the trucks, because there's been a lot of concern about how those are going and what's happening. So,
yeah, and then we did have also from on the residential side, we did have some of the employees that were on probation. You know, they're not making. I mean, we've gone through everything that we can to help them out. You know, helping them out on the route. But, you know, some people just don't catch on to it. And I think we got three that are probably going to let them go. They didn't pass probation. And then we have two that are going to be retiring. So that's going to be, we'll probably be losing here in the next month or so. We'll be losing five drivers. These guys are, you know, what we have now, the drivers that we have now, they are putting a lot of hours. They are coming in on overtime, but we're getting it done. We might have one or two, sometimes three routes down, but at the end of the day, when we have one driver finishing up the route, go, you know, start up the down route. But we haven't left anything behind, so we still been taking care of it, but they've been putting in a lot of hard hours.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item 7, landfill, and I see Frank. You can run, but you can't hide.
I've been very quiet here in the background.
Okay. So you're going to start with the landfill gas update.
Yes, I'll start with the landfill gas update. I don't know how much you know about it, but I'll start, give a general overview from the beginning. I want to say it's almost 2 years now where GHD, one of the environmental consultants that's under contract with the city of Tucson, completed a feasibility study for our landfill gas and utilization of it. What would be, basically the study was to determine what would be the best option and course of action for us to do with our landfill gas. Of course, right now we're just flaring the gas. We did have at one point an agreement with Tucson Electric Power where we were piping our landfill gas, raw gas, to them, and they were producing electricity. That contract and that agreement ended. And it was basically on the TEP side. They changed their operation and they didn't want to use our landfill gas anymore at that point, which started for the city and our department to start thinking about what the next step would be for our landfill gas. So that feasibility, from the feasibility study, the recommendation was for the city of Tucson to clean up the landfill gas, in essence, refine it to better quality and CNG pipeline quality gas, which would be a renewable natural gas, RNG, at that point. That RNG would then be piped to and injected into one of the regional pipelines. And the two regional pipelines in the area is Kinder Morgan or Kinder Morgan Pipeline or Southwest Cass Pipeline. Roughly there, I think it's about a mile and a half away. Both pipelines are about a mile and a half away. Or Kinder Morgan is 1.5 mile and Southwest Cass is a 6 mile distance. From the recommendation, then we, City of Tucson, EGSD proceeded to put out an RFP, request for proposals. And we're in the process of reviewing the proposals that were submitted. So I can't give up any much detail on what those proposals contain until the whole process is completed. But we are moving forward. So it's the recommendation that GHG gave us to clean up the gas and then inject it into the pipeline. That our RFP didn't just include that. We also opened it up for additional ideas or recommendations from proposers, developers for an RNG system. And so we're evaluating and we're looking at, so the cleanup process is not the only one available. There could be other options. There could be the option of generating electricity on site from our landfill gas, or there could be other options of possibly even cleaning up the landfill gas, but building a fueling system for the city fleet, for refuse trucks that are on CNG right now, or the bus fleet. There's still plenty of options, not just necessarily cleaning it up and put it in the injecting into one of the pipelines. So the reason to inject it into one of the pipelines is because if the RNG is used in the transportation industry, basically if it's used for the bus fleet or for refuse trucks or for other companies or entities that want to use that gas in their transportation trucks, larger vehicles that use CNG, then there's a high potential for the city to bring in revenue, much needed revenue that the city needs. So I think that was the biggest push. That's on an economic scale, that's the best option right now. Because the federal, there's a federal program, it's called the RIN, Renewable Index Numbers, that are generated. So you can do one RIN for every million BTUs of RNG that's created. Then those RINs are marketed to industries that need those RINs to meet their emission standards and reductions. And so that revenue would come back to the city. Not only that revenue, but also the revenue for the excess RNG that would be created if it's sold in the open market, then those revenues again would come back to the city. So at least a percentage of it, depending on the developer and what kind of royalty system the city ends up signing up with the developer for the system.
What is the volume of landfill gas that's currently flared? Do you know?
So currently we are flaring about 1,000 standard cubic feet per minute, SCFMs. Before, when we were transporting gas, landfill gas to TEP, we were around the 1,400 SCFM range. And the only reason why we're not extracting and flaring that much is because we're not actively extracting all the landfill gas that we need them to ship over. And then there have been some issues with some of our extraction wells. And so we can get up to the level if we need to again, and we will, because we're planning, and the plan is to generate 2,500 standard cubic feet per minute from our landfill at active extraction.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm also going to add that we are applying for an EPA grant along with Pima County to include the landfill gas system. And, you know, it just depends on how that grant goes. If we get awarded, then we'll be in better position to negotiate better terms with a developer, because then the city would have the full funds to develop the system. And then we can negotiate better terms.
Great. Any other questions for Frank? Okay, let's move
Doug on. Doug is developing questions in his head.
Yeah, the planned area development, PAD update.
Okay.
So it's all good, Frank. It's all good.
And any questions, you know, you can always reach out and ask where we're at too. Brittany had sent out a general plan figure of what the planned area development update includes, and she can bring that up too and share the screen. I think she's on.
I'm here.
And let thank me just you for finding out.
Let me just load the PDFs.
Okay, so let me just start talking a little bit about the planned area development. As part of the name change and all the activities that are going to happen, well, let me just start what a planned area development consists of. And it's basically a master plan for the zoning and the land use for the Los Reales Sustainability Campus, which was previously the Los Reales Landfill. We have a current PAD, planned area development plan. However, it only includes a small portion of what you see on the screen right now. And so we do need to do a pad revision so that we can incorporate the additional property and land that has been acquired recently as part of what is planned for the expansion of the entire location out here at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. And you can see what the full pad is going to include. So there are going to be some additional land use that's going to be added to the pad, which then also requires a revision to it. We're in the process. The document has been revised and drafted, and we're in the process of reviewing that. Would you go back to the first one? And so a lot of, I'm sure you've heard of what is being planned out here. So, but these districts, so the pad is divided into districts, and that's where we're going to request approval for. We've got the waste reclamation district, which is basically the landfill and the landfilling operation of all the waste that comes in, which will also include any processing of, if we end up developing a MRF out here at the landfill, at the campus, then it would be included within that footprint. And you can see the inner yellow, lighter yellow outline. Then there's still some open space, and we have to maintain some open space for recreation and for public use, and also as a buffer to, especially to some of the residential developments that are around our entire site. If you look on the top right of the screen, where you see Garden Stone Drive, Garden Stone Drive is a new road that goes from Craycroft, and it goes to the new development, which is, I believe it's roughly around 1,500 homes that are going to be developed. And they're in the process already of developing those. And so along Garden Stone, in that green area, we're going to have a recreation center or ball fields, soccer fields, possibly a splash pad, playgrounds, pickleball, basketball, volleyball courts. And of course, there has to be parking too. So that entire area right there is going to be developed. And that's part of what's being called right now phase one, which includes developing those ball fields and developing a walking path or trail, which is that red outline that you see, dotted outline that you see all over the map. But phase one is only on the top right that goes along Garden Stone to Los Reales Landfill up to Swan. Only that walking path is being developed in phase one. You see the blue area that's right above that on the right-hand side, up where it says Garden Stone Drive. Those are going to be the Sustainability Campus Commerce District. That'll be divided into different lots or plots for commercial entities to come in and possibly do recycling of materials that come into the landfill as we start doing more diversion. Then the orange area.
Frank, I have a quick question. Garden Stone Drive, is that the one that's closed right now as you enter the landfill area?
Well, it's not closed anymore. It's already been fully developed, and there's already asphalt down there. So that road is is being used to get to that development. It's primarily just being used by the construction workers.
Okay. Because I drove by there the other day on the way to the to the landfill, and I saw that the road was still closed. I think it was last week that I went by. But there was a sign there that said it was road was closed.
It is open at this point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The orange area, that's a community resource district. So that's where more than likely we're going to have an education center. There's also plans to have more of not necessarily a nursery, but the tree growing area where you see the words Los Reales Landfill, where it intersects Craycroft Road. And then you see a little bit more open space in the green area, right adjacent to that as you move to the left hand. And then there's another small blue area, which would also be a commerce district. And you see some blue over on the end on the left, far left, which is Swan Road and Los Reales Landfill. And then a final commerce district is going to be on the bottom. You may want to scroll a little bit down that. And so that's also going to be slated for commercial use. That's kind of like at a macro look. As far as the waste footprint goes to, and again, I said that the pad has been drafted and we're in the review process. But there's also, we're looking at incorporating some more fill area for the waste footprint. We are permitted right now for additional waste cells than what we have developed. There are some on the west end, but because we have the compost operation on that end, and there's other plans, those two west cells, which would be along, not along Swan Road, but adjacent to the unlined area. I don't know if you know what the unlined area, but it's that landfilled area right now that you kind of see in the background. Those west cells would more than likely be eliminated and moved over to a different location, more on the east side of the landfill footprint.
Because why are you doing that?
Well, there's actually some fairly good reasons, because those are very small cells and they wouldn't last very long. To build them, of course, is expensive to line those. It would be better to just go ahead and line the bigger cells and not necessarily have to be constricted to that area. And we can also use that surface area for, we have the composting facility there. We can always move it somewhere else, but it would be beneficial to keep it in that area. The landfill gas project, if once it gets developed, it would also be located in that west end where the west cells would be built. And so it's just a matter of having the engineers just redo the configuration of the waste cells. But we wouldn't necessarily lose that airspace. We would just move it to a different location.
Where?
Part of that is just going to end up being on the west, on the east end.
What's the expected length of this landfill? I mean, how many more years can it go?
Right now, we have a projected outlook of about 60 years without adding any additional airspace.
That seems amazing considering how fast the cells are filling up. Is that going pretty quite a bit higher?
Well, we can still go up higher, yes. So we have not reached our capacity, height capacity yet.
So the 60 years includes going higher?
Yes. And the 60 years right now includes what is currently permitted.
Because this area that's kind of a loop in the yellow to the southeast.
On the bottom?
Yeah, to the bottom. That line, is that already a slope that's there, or that's projected? Or I'm not quite sure how to read the...
No, that's projected, the loop road that you see there.
Yeah, I was looking a little higher. But all that area between what the landfill is now and the loop road is available?
Yes.
Okay. Where's the wash?
Which wash?
Wash that was used to be shown going through the southern part yes. of the property.
Brittany, if you just...
I guess it's in the gray area called Open Space Recreation District.
Yes.
Okay.
That's primarily where the wash goes through, and that's the airport wash.
Right,
okay. The North Fork. If you recall the rodeo wash, which is on the far east end, up a little higher, close to where we currently have our borrow pit. The airport wash is basically cut off at this point because of the landfill.
Mm-hmm. But where does it go?
It just goes into our retention basin, which is primarily our borrow pit right now.
Hello, Frank.
Yes.
So on a for an average, how many tons a day do you guys get for like a week's average or a daily average? I don't know if you have that off the top of your head.
Yeah, so our daily average is around 2,500 tons.
Thank you.
And we bring in 750,000 tons a year. Which increases, it's been increasing annually at about a 2% rate.
How much was that, 15%?
2%.
2%.
The annual increase, it's been steady. We haven't seen a drop since COVID. Any additional questions or anything that I may not have explained that you have heard or?
No, you've given us a lot of information. It sure is looking pretty fancy out there.
Oh, I have a question, Frank. What you said there was, you haven't reached the height limitation. What is the height limitation there?
As far as how many feet?
Yes.
I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look that up.
Okay. I was just kind of curious.
Yeah.
Do you know what the limitation is, but do you know what it is right now?
Right now, we're at about 200. Hold on. 286 minus number. We're about 100. Does it make sense? We should be about 138.
Okay.
And it's 100 foot deep on the line cells on average.
So do you have to go I'm trying to think of the sequence of events. So you get this pad approved by the city. And then with that, you go to DEQ to change the permit, or do you not have to change the permit? for the landfill?
Yes, we would have to change the permit. It would have to be, we would have to update the facility plan.
So you do that after the pad is approved?
Yes.
And how long do you think that takes?
For the facility plan revision?
Yeah.
Well, DEQ is supposed to take 45 days to complete, ADEQ, to complete the review.
Okay. That's not bad if they actually do it. That time.
Okay. Thank you, Frank, and as always.
Of course, there are public notice timeframes too, and so that usually extends those timeframes.
So there'll be public meetings on this and so forth, other than the pad, or in addition to the pad, or
in addition to the pad, especially for the facility plan.
Are we ready to move on to future agenda items?
Yeah.
You have more questions?
No, no. I wanted to throw in a little something about Plan Tucson. If you want, I can just wait till next month. Though there will be another meeting of Plan Tucson in the meantime.
Okay. Was that the one I missed on Monday?
Yeah.
Okay. I had to do physical therapy, so.
Oh, that was too bad. I have a thought about something though, and I don't know if this is the right place for it, but I've been going to the landfill quite a bit lately, and it occurred to me that it's not easy if you either haven't, one, been there before or hadn't been there in a long time. Once you pull into the facility, you've got all those cones on the right hand side for the traffic, and so there's nothing there that says this line is for residents and for other things, and there's another line there for something else, and I'm not quite sure what it is. But if it's your first time there, or as I said, it's been a long time since you've been there, it might be kind of confusing as to which line you're supposed to be in. So I don't know if that's something that could be addressed so that makes it easier for people to know where they're supposed to be going.
That's a good point. I'll definitely look into that. The reason we have the cones there is because every customer that comes in is required to go through the scales. And so just keep them within the coned area, and that's where they're supposed to go. The outside of the cones, those are the commercial customers that have RFID tags in their vehicles. And so they can go and use the automated scale. They don't need a scale house attendant. They just go through the automated scale and they go in, the system records their weight, and they dump their waste, and then they come out and through the outbound.
Yeah, but you don't see that sign until you're already in line in the first place. As you drive into the facility, you're going to see a big line there on the left-hand side, and there's cones on the right. You're not sure, you know, if it would be marked so that residents and, you know, all the people that are just there for normal procedure for the landfill should be in that line, and then mark it so that the RFID is supposed to be in the other line. And I know they know they're supposed to be there, but other people who've never been there before don't know that.
And we can probably do a little better with our signage. So I'll look at it, definitely.
Well, you've got that overhead thing that you might be able to put a sign up there. That's possible.
It is possible, however, our experience is that nobody looks at that sign. they don't pay attention to the overhead sign, but it's easier for us to have more eye level type signs.
Okay.
That you really see.
I think that would help.
Okay. No, thank you. That's good input.
Okay. You know, let's see.
Brittany, can I do a call to the audience if I can find my notes? Sitting here. Oh.
Because I was going to say, you know, Margo, we talked about Plan Tucson on Fully SAC.
Oh, okay. So you'd rather Brittany,
can we add Margo, give her a little bit of time on Fully SAC? Is that okay?
Yeah, I can create an item.
Okay.
All right. And then I'll be better prepared. I thought I had all the stuff together, but I don't know where I put it, so.
Yeah, and I think everybody would want to hear that. So,
okay, yeah, it's something we need to talk about. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for next month? Well,
I would just like to see that collections continue. I mean, it was really interesting their report today, but I'd like to see continually just also stop on drivers and routes and trucks and how it's working and what the plans are for the future. And, you know, we've just been through a route readjustment, whether that is still working well or some of those kinds of things, maintenance ever an issue anymore, or, you know, kind of a general update on how it's working.
Cool.
I guess the other question is, is anybody replacing Pat yet?
I was going to ask that, if there's been any interviews. Will we ever hear?
I think that's going to be a Carlos question for next week.
Okay. That's what okay. Because I think we asked him last time.
Did, you know, it only closed like a week ago, Sunday. So.
Okay. It did close. Okay.
Yeah, on the 18th.
Closed on the 18th. Okay. Because I just haven't seen anything even on the city site. So
city's changing its process for HR. So right now there's only one position posted.
HR really struggles. Oh, well, is that it at all? Anything else? I would like to mention that I've been watching the trash truck cartoon on Netflix with my granddaughter, and she really likes it. I would recommend it to grownups as well.
I guess the other issue that might have some things, and I almost hate to bring it up because I know Christina is just so overworked, but are there any plans for increasing education? I mean, you were just talking about the challenges of the nuances of plastics. And
yes, we are working on that right now. We're going to be updating all our materials and upping our social media stuff and the website and making sure that all the drop-off sites have the bins are up, you know, clear, clean, repainted, new signage. Yeah,
do you want to report to us about that? So
sure,
next month.
Yeah, sure, sounds good. Okay, let's move on. There's 9. I don't think we have any call to audience. And 10. Let's adjourn. And it is, what time is it? Bonus of 4:26. Okay, got it. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Appreciate all your work.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Have a good one.